You're listening to Pod Summit on podtech.net. This is part two of our interview with Shelby Bonney, Chairman and CEO of CNET. I'm Mike Boych with Bud Colligan.
Shelby, step back a little bit for us and talk about the vision for CNET and what kind of analogies could you think of in thinking about where CNET is going, what other kinds of companies might we compare it to, and where will its position be in the media universe as we look out 5 or 10 years?
Well, we think about ourselves as a media company, and we focus on vertical content, and we do it with lots of different brands. So we pursue a multi-brand strategy. Good analogies would be Time Inc., which is part of Time Warner, which has a series of magazines. They have Time Magazine, but they also have Sports Illustrated and People and all sorts of others magazines, or Condé Nast, that also has a series of magazines focused against particular audiences and categories, or something in the cable world like MTV Networks that is called MTV Networks and has MTV, but also has Nickelodeon and Nick Jr. And if you look at any of those companies, they have been great businesses over time. And they've done it when they've created really good product that people really care about, that serves the needs of an audience that, you know, is ultimately passionate about something. And when we think about our business in a good way, we're still very early on in the creation of content on the internet. There's a lot of unbelievable services. There's a lot of stuff out there, but there's been a lot less focus on really good content verticals. And so there's a lot left to do. And so as we think about kind of the aspirations of our organization, we've shown an ability to do a bunch of categories really well. We've also shown an ability to do new categories. So this last year we added TV.com, which focuses on television shows. So if you're crazy about Lost or 24 or American Idol or whatever else, you can go on and get episode guides and clips and talk to other people that care about that show and, you know, contribute information and write your own reviews and do all these things. Well, that's a new thing for us. And that's a wholly new vertical. It's one that went from nothing, we launched it in June, to it's now over 10 million uniques a month, and is the only non-network, non-portal that's in the top 10 of television sites. Mm. And so what you'll see us do is, in the same way when you think about Time Inc. or Condé Nast or MTV Networks, we're going to continue adding verticals. And as we find verticals that we think are attractive that we can do, you should expect that we're going to do them.
So it sounds exciting for you guys in terms of the shift in attention from traditional media to the internet. What does it mean for those traditional media companies that you just cited? What do you see ahead for companies like Time Warner or Dow Jones?
Well, I would say that in general, the media industry is at a point really over the next 5 to 10 years that there's going to be unprecedented change. There was a lot of discussion of change really in the last 5 years that, you know, especially, you know, the late 90s where there was all this concern that, you know, I have to have a dot-com strategy and stuff like that. Right now, we're really seeing it. We're seeing, for the first time, impacts on newspaper readership. We're seeing impacts on what people are doing behaviorally in terms of watching TVs. You know, it's very hard to find the male 18 to 34 audience on television anymore. And so, same thing with movies. I mean, you can go right down the list in what you think of as the traditional media infrastructure. And so there's going to be a lot of change. I think more content is going to be distributed via IP. Advertising models are going to need to change. So it's a point of enormous change. And I think some companies will do that really well. And especially, you know, you take companies that have had very strong brands and, you know, great IP around content. I think they're going to find a way to transition that. Won't always be easy. It might be a little clumsy at times. But I think you'll see them, and I think some companies are doing it quite well. At the same time, the whole distribution systems are going to change. So I think people that are very reliant on distribution are going to see a lot of strains on their business. I mean, what does happen to local TV stations as more companies follow the lead of Disney and distribute TV shows via places like iTunes? What does that mean for local TV stations and kind of what happens? And so I think a lot of these companies will make the transition well. But there's going to be a lot of change and a lot of strains. I would also say that the fundamental principles of what is a journalist is changing. In the old days, kind of journalist was in an ivory tower and would write something or say something and say, this is what it is, and kind of. that's not really what it is anymore. And journalists have to play a much more important role of how do they engage a whole bunch of other knowledgeable people, and how do they embrace a broader community, and what does it mean not only to have an opinion, but also to help other people know and filter for them other information that's out there. And that's a very difficult thing for traditional media companies to do. One of the things we did when we launched news.com early on was we did our own stories, and then we said, well, gosh, what if we had our editors say, here are the other 10 stories that we think were important that happened at other places. And they would literally provide direct links, no monetary benefit, to what quite often were our direct competitors. And we got two types of emails. We got emails from our direct competitors who said, you guys are the dumbest folks that ever fell off a tomato truck. You know, you're sending us all your users. They're going to realize how much better we are than you, and your users are never going to come back. So you're a free marketer. And then we got emails from our users that said, you know, I've stopped going to your competitors because I know if they have an important story, you'll tell me about it. And it's that's a very, you know, psychologically, that is a very difficult thing for traditional media companies to embrace. And, you know, even with a lot of history in the last 10 years to say that users fundamentally like open models more than they like closed models, still, traditional media companies, you don't see them doing a lot of, quote-unquote, pointing out or pointing to other resources. And that, when I think about a lot of the traditional media companies, I think there's an ability to make a lot of transition. It's going to be, do they fundamentally shift towards a way of thinking about content that really embraces what ultimately a consumer would want in terms of how they consume it?
It's interesting that you mentioned the roles of reporters changing, because Mike and I are kind of an example of that, where we got into this just to have some fun, and also the concept of Pod Summit, technology leaders on innovation and entrepreneurship. We think after 25 years in the Valley, and you know, you've been running CNET for 10 years, that you start to develop not only a network of relationships, but an ability to reach people and share that information in fun and interesting ways. So I think we're an example of the way that media is changing. And at PodTech, the same thing, you know, just different ways of distributing information. I know CNET's got an active podcasting capability as well.
I think it's incredibly exciting in the democratization of information and the ability to get more opinions, because we'll find, you know, we might go in and review a particular camera, but there's quite often three people that know more about that camera possible than what our editors will know. And the ability and how you engage them and how you make them a resource of information, this is an incredibly empowering thing. The one caveat I will put out there that I mentioned earlier with our experience of what's happened and what happened in the cable industry early on is I am very concerned about what's going on with respect to this whole issue called net neutrality. And I think it has the potential, if we don't see net neutrality, to have a very dampening impact on the level playing field and the openness and the ability for entrepreneurs to try things and do new things. It could create kind of a series of have and have nots. And that really concerns me. And I think, you know, in the big scheme of things, you know, CNET, I think, would, you know, it's probably more a have than a have not. So it probably has less impact on CNET, but it could have a very dampening impact on what's going on the internet. And I think it's something that, you know, I hope your listeners will care about and will do something about, and will talk to the representatives. I think it is a very big issue, and a lot of the really good new things, whether it's MySpace or YouTube or other things that have come around, will be much less likely if we're in a world where the telecom companies are trying to restrict access and create different tiers of services.
What specifically is CNET doing around the issues of net neutrality? Are you lobbying combining with people at the IAB, the Interactive Advertising Bureau, or what's the strategy?
We're involved. We have, you know, there's some other companies that were involved with respect to lobbying. I mean, the problem on the lobbying front is, who are you lobbying against? You're lobbying against big telecom companies who've been taking, you know, all these Congress people to breakfast and lunch and on golfing trips.
More than that.
Yeah, golfing trips and everything else for a long period of time. And so, you know, I think one of the important things we think we can do is we want to talk more about it with both, you know, with me as an executive, but also to the people that use our different services. And so news.com, you've seen a lot of coverage at news.com on the issue. And, you know, I hope it's something that people will take seriously, because having been as an entrepreneur trying to start a cable network and having seen what it was like to, you know, have a gatekeeper who basically said, look, you know, I'm going to determine your success or not, and it's all going to depend on whether you give me your company or give me your economics. You didn't see a lot of great entrepreneurial activity in the cable industry, not in the same way that you've seen on the internet. And so it's a real issue, and I think people really should pay attention to it, and I encourage people to be outspoken on it. And, I, you know, this is one I hope that just a lot of vocal consumers, because they're ultimately going to be the losers in this, I hope a bunch of vocal consumers speak out and make a difference.
Well, it's interesting because on Pod Summit, Mike and I are hoping that in addition to just talking about companies and entrepreneurship and innovation, it'll also be a forum for social issues and political issues like net neutrality. So we may come back to that in a future show.
I think you ought to, and I hope you do.
Back to the more mundane part of the business, though. It sounds like advertising is very much the fuel that allows CNET to do what it does. How much of the advertising spend is interactive today, and where do you see that percentage headed?
So, I mean, the numbers are always a little squishy. It's somewhere between probably 3% and 5% if you look at most companies globally. If you then look at how people spend their time, the internet is actually now past TV as the most consumed medium that people have in a week. And so there are, from a percentage of time, it's as high as kind of 30 to 33% in terms of people where they spend their time each day. And, you know, you look at kind of growth estimations, there's been a lot of really good research done around kind of what is the optimum media mix. And this is research that's been done really over the last 3 years. And they say at minimum for a company, even a company that sells soap or other things, at minimum they should spend between 10 and 15% of their budget online. Mm-hmm. And some companies, you now see percentages as high as 40%. And so it'll depend on what industry you're in. Clearly, it's a lot harder, for instance, if you're selling soft drinks. You know, it's not like people can buy soft drinks online, but that is where your users are. And that is where, you know, your consumers. And so if you want to talk to your consumers, you got to go to where your consumers are. So, you know, we're at 3 to 4%, 5% right now. I mean, it relatively, you know, I think as you look out over the next 4 or 5 years, I mean, it ought to get to 10 or 15% pretty easily. But I'm a big believer that I think it ought to go past that. And it's just going to be a question of time. And a lot of the issues that advertisers are going to have to deal with is, you know, what is a good internet ad? What's it look like? I kind of know what a good TV ad is, but what's a good internet ad? How do I measure it? Where should I advertise? Where should I not advertise? How do I think about all this history I've had in both print and TV? How do I think about that on the internet? And there's going to be a new generation of marketers and new generation of people that work in advertising agencies. And I think we're still very early on in this medium. But it's also a medium that out of nowhere is about a $10 billion medium. And that's not insignificant in the scope of marketing dollars.
Last time I checked, $10 billion was a pretty big number.
Yeah.
What about other trends in advertising and interactive advertising, Shelby? I know you're active in the IAB, and they have a number of initiatives. What kinds of things are you seeing, either from the consumer products companies that have not been big advertisers on the internet to the advertising agencies themselves who have had to completely reinvent themselves to start dealing with this new medium?
I would say really three things. One is that there's been a broader embracing of this medium for just branding. I think early on people thought it's a great direct response medium, and now they're recognizing you can do branding, and there's been very effective research to demonstrate that, and you see a lot of really good creative campaigns that people are doing. You know, Nike's done some really good work. You know, you've seen whether it's Dell or other people. And there's interesting things happening with respect to kind of what you can do with respect to branding. The second would be video. As people are embracing and as access speeds have gotten better, video has become a much more significant part from an advertising perspective. And it's kind of good and bad. I think at first glance they're like, well, this is like TV, And so I just run a TV ad or I'll run a short TV ad. And I think we all think that's probably not the end place you should get. But it's at least making people aware that you can do more and this is a richer medium. And I think once they, ironically, once they start thinking about things like video, they start thinking then about things like audio and other forms of rich media in terms of what they can do and how do they create kind of a better, more rounded marketing campaign. The third thing is that advertising in general is just getting more mathematical. And that's been, in some respects, thank you to things like Google and paid search listings and stuff like that, that quite often advertising, kind of in the old days, was a very creative thing. And you had heavily kind of liberal arts majors and, you know, people that wanted to be highly creative, and it was all about creativity with not a lot of math. And though lots of other parts of businesses have gone through supply chain management, all these things, and have gotten very quantitative, marketing has been that one holdout where it's still, yeah, it's more art than science. And what's happened really in the last 3 or 4 years is you're seeing a lot more science come into marketing. And you're seeing more reliance on I have to have, you know, more quantitative people in marketing functions, and how do I think about results and ROI around campaigns. And I think overall that's been a very good trend. I think it will squeeze out inefficiency in a lot of companies as people spend their money better. And I think it will also increase that drive to the internet, where it ultimately is a more measurable medium.
So Google in particular, as well as Yahoo and Microsoft, are the three companies that we hear so much about in the internet world with respect to advertising and just with respect to content and traffic. So how do you place CNET in context for us relative to those companies? Are they competitors? Are they partners? Or how do you look at them?
Well, in the media world, you're both kind of partner and competition at the same time always, which at some point you look and say, gosh, you know, everyone's competing for advertising dollars. So all of us are calling upon companies. But I would say that more of these companies really are partners than they are competitors. These are, you know, Google is one of our largest customers. We have a very good and strong relationship with Google. We license content to actually all three of them. So we license content to Google and to Yahoo and to MSN. And to AOL. I mean, we take a very inclusive position in thinking, you know, gosh, we're going to serve our audiences really well, but also we believe that, you know, we can help make more people aware of us by distributing our content in lots of other places. So we really look to the horizontal players like Google, Yahoo, and MSN really as just that, horizontal players who ultimately can be good partners for us in what for us is really a vertical world.
Shelby, let's shift gears a bit now and start talking about futures, where the company's going and where you think the industry's going. I want to come back to one thing you mentioned, though, which was international, and that kind of ties into this whole future area, China. This morning I read in the paper that there's, I think, something like 1 in 6 or 1 in 7 internet users in China is using Skype, which was amazing. And we know about the explosion of mobile phones in China. CNET has 500 employees over there already. Google and Yahoo have made big bids to enter the market, eBay. Talk about the Chinese market and also CNET's strategy in China.
Great. It's still very early. So though, you know, in the big scheme of things, you'd say there's, you know, what, 200, 300 million internet users. It's still a fraction of the people that are in China. It's very early. It's very early in terms of internet advertising. It's just, it's still at a very fledgling state. Having said that, what we've liked is we've had the pleasure of working with great people there. We have great entrepreneurs. We've been able to make a series of acquisitions in China, and we think there's enormous opportunity there. And strategically approach it just the way we approach the U.S. So we know that you ultimately have to build great brands around passionate audiences, and it needs to speak with voice and be able to participate in that community. And so we have sites like Zol, sites like Feng Yao, sites like PC Home that are uniquely Chinese, and serve their each of their respective audiences and markets really well. We've seen a lot of growth out of China, and it's a place that increasingly we'll continue to put resources to.
Is there a place in the long term for an independent size, a mid-sized media company like CNET, or is it inevitable that you'll have to grow or get bought?
Well, I think if you look contextually at what's happened in the media industry, over the last 15 years, we've seen enormous amounts of consolidation. And you saw, Time Warner get bigger and, buy Turner and become AOL Time Warner. And you've seen, Disney continue to buy things like Cap Cities ABC and stuff like that. And so there's been mass consolidation. Ironically, in the last year, it started to go the other direction. And so you're seeing Viacom split up. You've seen Clear Channel on the radio side split up and begin to break up pieces. Now, in some respects, you can argue maybe that was driven by, what they thought in terms of how the financial markets would value them and all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it does speak to there probably was over-consolidation, and that in the end, were media brands better off for being part of a broader group of companies, and were advertisers and their customers better off being able to buy all of those things? And though I think they're, it looked great on a lot of investment bankers' whiteboards and in their blue books and stuff like that, I'm not sure it really panned out. And so in the end, I think the people that the media companies that know what they do and know what they do well and just do more of it have tended to be incredibly successful. And so, as I look at CNET, I think we're one of the unique companies when, you talk about a whole bunch of other players in this space who's really focused on content. And we believe in content, and we believe in building authentic content brands. We've been able to really serve our marketers. We have extraordinarily high retention rates, 95%+ retention rates on our advertisers. If we get an advertiser, we keep an advertiser. And so, I'd say that users are better off and marketers are better off, under the guise that, companies like us continue doing what we do well. And so that's what we focus on doing. And, with respect, we don't control everything, and we have, a board of directors and we have shareholders, and ultimately those are their decisions. But, our job is if we can make our users happier every day and if we can make our marketers happy every day, I think the organization in whatever form it is will do really well.
Do you have a different speech for the companies that you're trying to buy, though? CNET has bought a few companies over the years. Tell us a little bit about that or what your attitude is toward the flip side of consolidation.
Well, we've probably made, I'm going to guess, 50 acquisitions over the last 10 years, and most of them have been very small. And I think, it would be a different thing if you're a really small company today, because the question is, as a really small company, can you go knock on an advertiser's door and get access? And do you have an ability to market yourself? And so, are they big enough to be able to be standalone? Can we bring economies of scale? And I think where we've succeeded is by creating an environment where entrepreneurs can succeed and will stay. And if there's anything kind of I hope for this organization, because I think in a medium that is changing a lot, you need to have an environment where entrepreneurs can stay and flourish. And I think we've been able to uniquely deliver on that.
Shelby, I'm kind of cynical about consolidation.
You're just cynical in general.
Yeah, about consolidation and divestment. Not anything that you've said, but just in general, it seems like a general cycle that the investment banks and their insatiable desire for fees find companies to buy, and then when things get to the Viacom size, it's time to
break them up.
But that's a different topic. Let's talk about CNET growing to $1 billion in revenue. The analysts are putting you, a little bit north of $400 million this year. What does it take to grow to $1 billion and get on that stage in terms of that size media company?
I mean, first and foremost, I don't think it's a major strategic change. We need to continue to execute. We need to continue to deliver on value to our audiences and value to our marketers, and we need to do more of it. And so I do think to reach $1 billion, we need to continue to add more verticals. I believe we can still rely on advertising as our medium. I don't think it means we need to become a conglomerate of a whole bunch of you know, other things that we're not good at. I think we just, if we continue to execute against kind of vertical content brands and add more of them, continue to grow the ones we have, I think we can do incredibly well. And I think, you know, $1 billion, when you look at overall growth that should happen in this medium, I think $1 billion is very attainable.
We talked a little bit earlier about old-style media companies. Then there's, I guess, the CNET generation media company, and now we hear about Web 2.0 and a whole new generation of user-generated content. How does CNET look at user-generated content? Is it something that benefits you, or is it a challenge for the company?
I think it absolutely benefits us. And when we define content, we really think about three legs to the stool. The first is content that we produce, so original content. The second is professional content that other people produce. And then the third is user-generated content. And personally, I think to get it really right is to do all three of those. I think there's benefit to doing your own content. Part of it is the fact that you become a subject expert. So to get the second leg and the third leg right is also about editing them. So knowing, well, that's good user opinion, that's not, and other things. And I think it's really helpful to have people that make it their job every day to be really smart about whatever the topic is. And I do think the form of what is a journalist is changing, but I think it's doing all three of those. And it's that unique mix of being able to be part of the conversation and to involve all sorts of other things, and you know, whether it's user-generated or video or blogs or other forms of rich media. It's kind of, how do you put all those pieces together to create something that's really unique? And you'll see all sorts of different forms of that within our network. So you take a site like TV.com, we really rely not on, you know, when we cover something like Lost, we're not covering it. I mean, we're finding people out there in the community that are really passionate about Lost, and they're doing it. And then we've created really thoughtful kind of editing mechanisms to help do that. And so it's something that we, you know, I think from the beginning have embraced, a sense of openness and sense of there's kind of a broader community out there. But I think very much it helps when it's anchored by people that kind of are doing it and living it and going to conferences and talking to, going and visiting companies and doing kind of the hard work that, as you guys are learning, reporting is.
Shelby, as a final question, we'll wrap up with this one. A lot of our audience are entrepreneurs. They're trying to build successful companies like CNET. And you're a CEO of a public company. So talk to them about, you know, the pluses and minuses of being a public company CEO today. And if there's any words of wisdom you have in parting for guys that are building companies, guys and gals building companies, and what they should know or learn as they move forward.
Well, some of it is the same if you're a big company versus a little company. It is, you need to hire really good people. You need to create a culture that you're really proud of, that is really reflective of something that is special. You need to treat your customers really well. And I think if you do those things, and I think, you know, where you always make mistakes is, you know, you make mistakes when you don't hire the right people or you differ from your values and you have an organization and you either cut corners or you allow people to cut corners within your organization, or you don't treat your customers well, or you stop listening to your customers. And, you know, it's the same things we worry about. I mean, we look as, you know, as the media world is changing, customer expectations are changing. We need to make sure that we change with it and we continue to innovate and adopt. You know, we need to look, is this a place people want to work? Is this a team they want to be on? Are we hiring the right people as part of that? And I think those are the things that really are the difference. And in some respects, you know, my lesson when we started, I mean, I thought early on that there's so much value in the business plan, and we made so much of a big difference of, like, people signing NDAs and doing all this stuff. So much is what you do with the business plan. And, the idea might be 3% of the success. The other 97% is what you do with it, who you hire, what your company's like. Is it a company people want to work for? As the world changes, do you listen to your customers? Do you treat your customers well? That's what, in the end, is really important. And so, you know, if there's any lesson I've learned, it's really that.
Yeah, I always found that course corrections is about 95% of the game. If you can just keep moving forward and keep the team moving forward, you're going to win.
Absolutely.
Well, Shelby, thank you very much for a very entertaining and frank interview. We really appreciate your time. And this is Bud Colligan and Mike Boych saying goodbye for now from Pod Summit.